Hello, everyone. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks so much for being here. This Go Show, the farther the source, the longer the stream. Well, I would say there's a handful of concepts here coming together. This is a letter from Nichiren to Shijo Kengo, once again, one of his staunchest followers. Also, one of his followers he's a layperson, he's a samurai. So it's not like he's secluded in a land or a cave or just or some kind of a monastery where he can just practice all day, every day, and so on and so forth. He's in the mix. And most of Nichiren's letters, if they're not doctrinal or theses, they're addressed to the people of Japan. Of course, people who are following his doctrine of the Lotus Sutra. And as you know, he's rattling the waters, rattling the cage, because the accepted norm traditionally at that time in Japan was either you were Nembutsu or Zen or True Word. There were just a few schools that were used, quite frankly, not so much to attain Buddhahood, although that was the rhetoric, but to be socially, behaviorally controlled by the state. And the state, the shogunate at the time, was a very violent, very authoritarian state. So the spiritual side of life, the mental side of life, was basically about appeasing any thoughts of contradiction of the powers that be, right? They were Buddhism in name only, in other words. They used Shakyamuni's teachings, but they added their own interpretations, their own doctrines, so on and so forth, which were actually, as Nichiren points out over and over again, antithetical, really, in the parlance of the translations, enemies of the Buddha, but basically contradictory information that was not truly not Buddhism. So I say all of this because we spoke a few videos ago, and I've reiterated this thing about forbearance, a great concept of Buddhism. But there are different and varied interpretations of that word, right? So we talked about forbearance as in tolerance and a sort of not an acceptance, but a compassion for others' journeys throughout their life to attain enlightenment. Some people resist it a lot. Some people think they have their own way and it will take them a long time to come around. And you know, it's hard to witness people, especially people you care about, but even strangers, compounding the sufferings in their lives simply due to ignorance. Ignorance of Myoho Renge Kyo, ignorance of what it is, this life's purpose, how our bodies are our vehicles for our minds, not the other way around. As humans, samsaric experiences, samsaric manifestations, we tend to be extremely focused on body, right? Pleasures of the flesh, you know, shelter, food, and sex. That's our three imperatives as humans. And we're super attached to those, right? That's why they're imperatives. But that also extrapolates into having the latest iPhone and having the best car and having being the most beautiful woman and having the most beautiful woman, right? All of these greedy, constant, obsessive wanting to possess, right? That's our human experience. So as Buddhists, knowing that we in ourselves have to work to transcend those attachments, doesn't mean we can't enjoy sex. It doesn't mean we can't just be delighted by a wonderful meal or endeavor to sturdy up our shelters and homes, right? But as Buddhists, we understand not to invest our essential self into those things. Those things are necessary because we're in samsara and they're necessary, but we're also not keen to overdo it or ritualize it or fetishize it, or, you know, to make it an end in and of itself, because that's not what life is for. Life is for maximizing our experience of this wonderful thing called life, and to awaken that Buddha mind, right? So the forbearance comes in because we know that not everyone understands that. And so we can't beat them up for it. We can't ridicule them for it. That would be terrible, right? Because our respect for their potential Buddhahood far outweighs their stumbling around and either avoiding it altogether or not even being ignorant of it. So that turns us into what? Bodhisattvas of the earth. So we teach, even if we're not verbatim telling somebody how to chant to attain their awakening, maybe they're not ready to hear that. We can't be the judge of that either. But we have to have what? Compassion. And we're an example. So that's a strict self-observation, isn't it? We have to be mindful of our actions. That's where mindfulness comes in. Mindful of the way we behave, especially around ignorant people, so that they can see us as a model. And once they return to that visual cue enough times, they will develop a curiosity to know what it is, how it is, that we are so different. That would be what Nichiren would call shoju. But shoju is also giving hints, helping people along, right? So here's the point as relates to this Gosho. This journey is long. There have long been, historically, before Buddhism and after, all sorts of machinations for making separate worlds out of groups of members to create instantaneous enlightenment. Instantaneous seated next to the great gods. You know, this is where the gods come in. Look at Jonestown. Look at over history, long-term, short-term. There's a lot of ritualistic practice in the world that pretends that with one fell swoop, either at death or during your lifetime, you can become this spiritual shot of light, and in that moment, be there, be at this exalted place, whatever or wherever it is. But the Lotus Sutra kind of stands alone as a teaching that says, look, the enlightenment, this aha, this brilliant moment, this being with the gods, as it were, using that rhetoric, parlance of the day, whatever. It can happen in moments, instantaneous moments, but this practice, this knowing, it's about living this life fully, completely, at its highest level. At Buddha. So no, it's not about when you die, you go and visit Buddha, because Buddha isn't a place. It isn't a who. It's a mind, life condition. It's an experience. And what do we know of in this entire universe that's capable of having experience? Humans, sentient beings. Now we can get into particularities of, is an ant sentient? Just for the purposes of this letter and this teaching, from Nichiren. Let's just focus about our own minds. The point is forbearance, tolerance, patience. These are qualities that are not innate to human beings. We want immediate gratification. We want immediate satisfaction. And there's a plethora of vices and worlds. You know, we're a consumerist society. Why? Why are we a consumerist society? Why does everyone have to have the latest, greatest, more, more, more? What is this greed thing about? It's about immediate gratification, right? A month after you have that new thing, it's old. And you don't treat it with any respect of any sort anymore because there must be a new, better one now. I have to have it. Right? That's taking advantage of our basest fundamental samsaric minds. And we're led by the nose with it. Every little girl or boy knows how to use that instinct with their parents or their siblings. But mom, there it is. What are you appealing to when you do that? You're tugging on your mom's little emotional strings to satiate your desire. I mean, it's innate in a human being, isn't it? You also see it in cats and dogs. Birds, even plants desire that you nurture them. But let's not get off topic. So, as we know the story with Shijo Kingo, he goes in and out of favor with his lord, his master. Largely volatilely, because Shijo Kingo is a devout follower of Nichiren and Nichiren's scholarship of the Lotus Sutra. And the Lotus Sutra specifically is diminished or all outright discounted or pushed away by Nembutsu, Zen, True Word, Pure Land, you know, this Amida Butsu chanting. It's still prevalent today. Any of you who are fans of Chinese wushu movies, kung fu movies, you'll hear Jet Li doing it. You'll hear other members who are, especially if they talk about Shaolin Temple and so forth, you'll hear them Amida Butsu chanting Amida Buddha's name. That's Nembutsu. They're enemies of the Lotus Sutra because the Nembutsu doctrine says a Mahavacharana, that is the pinnacle of the teachings. Well, Mahavacharana is a story that Shakyamuni made up. So how could the story be superior to the storyteller? It's so stupid. But entire cultural traditions for hundreds of years have followed those traditions. And once something is in the popular mind, it's very hard to sway it. And you hear Nichiren going, the emperor's naked, the emperor's naked. Not everyone wants to hear that. And yet there are those in the crowd that will go, damn, he's right. Right? So this is the situation in Japan. Well, Lord Emma, Shijo Kingo's master, he's Nembutsu. He also studies True Word and some other. But this fellow samurai, because see, when you're working with for a master like Lord Emma, Lord Emma is basically a huge property holder. So as you raise in rank in his assassin army, he lets you have more land, prettier land, more fertile land where you can feed your family, and not just your immediate family, but your extended family, and you can house them. That's your fiefdom. its land bequeathed to you as long as you behave. See how authoritarian? Because if I don't like you this week, if you piss me off, well, I'm going to take away half your acreage or the whole thing. I'll leave you homeless. Don't mess with me, right? Very authoritarian. So that's the scene for this Go Show. Nichiren at once empathizing with Shijo Kingo, reminding Shijo Kingo to stay steadfast in his practice of Lotus Sutra Buddhism. Sometimes things will disappear. The rug will be pulled out from underneath you. Don't let that end your practice or create doubt in your confidence, your determination. Because that's life. Life ebbs and flows. Life has hills and valleys. But the end, at the end of this journey, you have to know in your own mind that what you're practicing is the ultimate practice of living this life well. That doesn't mean this life will be perfect all the time. Sometimes it will be arduous. But understand that that comes through your life as the person you are, the place you're in, the time you're in. All of that is a manifestation of who you are, self and environment, right? And when things turn tough, then take a hard look at what energies are manifesting to make that tough. That's your karma, as it were. I know that's a often used word, and you can become numb to that word. It becomes meaningless. But think of it as the energy, the motive force of your life that brings along with it aspects that you're not maybe aware of. And so these difficulties are opportunities for you to look at how is that constructed? Where is that coming from? How do I appease that? And in your effort to appease it, you raise your life condition. So everything in Lotus Sutra Buddhism is about lifting life condition. So, without any more blah, 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 one of my favorite sayings. let's get into it. I've received 1,000 coins and respectfully reported in the presence of the Lotus Sutra that this is an amazing offering from Yorimoto. So that's Shijo Kingo, right? I believe that from afar, Shakyamuni Buddha, the Lord of Teachings, Many Treasures Buddha, and the Buddhas of the Ten Directions and close at hand, the deities of the sun and moon in their heavenly palaces will certainly watch over you. So this is an elaborate way of saying that as a samurai, you have the support of all these cosmic forces in your life. So you've made a wonderful offering to the Lotus Sutra, in other words, to your own Buddhahood, by supporting me, Nichiren, a human, just another guy, whose life mission it is to promote Myoho Renge Kyo, then your support of me is really a support of Myoho Renge Kyo, because I've dedicated my life to propagating it. And without me or anyone propagating the way I am the votary of the Lotus Sutra, then nobody would know about it, and this Buddhism would die, right? Because the latter day of the law, Shakyamuni already explained that this will be a period where the teaching is lost. So to stand up for that, that's why this is the period of bodhisattvas, you and I, bodhisattvas of the earth, because it remains on our shoulders to make sure that it doesn't get lost, that we are an exemplar and teachers of and assistants to the propagation and the practice of Myoho Renge Kyo. See how it all ties together? So Nichiren is letting Shijo Kingo know that his offerings, not only because of the coins and the food he may get, and so forth, certainly that's important, because that's an offering outside the self. When you chant and you practice and you study, Myoho Renge Kyo and Buddhism in its entirety, you are cultivating your Buddha awakening, right? But when you extend from you to another, whether it's helping somebody pronounce the sounds of Myoho Renge Kyo, or help them to recite, sit with them and recite the Gongyo, or you just assist someone's curiosity about what is that that you practice. It's Myoho Renge Kyo. If you come over, whatever you do to propagate Lotus Sutra Buddhism with Nichiren's scholarship as your guide, couldn't be easier. You are doing things for the sake of humanity. Outside of yourself, that is bodhisattva. Do you see? So this is what Nichiren is conveying to Shijo Kingo. If someone excels in this world, then even those who are regarded as worthies and sages, to say nothing of ordinary people, will all become jealous and bear grudges against that person. So we know what that situation is about, right? This thing that keeps happening to Shijo Kingo, his own fellow samurai conspiring behind his back to make him look bad to the boss, his master. And his master gets swayed by this because he's got an itch in his craw about this Nichiren fellow and the Lotus Sutra. Remember, he's Nembutsu. So he's already kind of pre-triggered. And every time he gets triggered, he takes away some of Shijo Kingo's land or takes away some privileges until he gets sick or something and Shijo Kingo comes to his rescue. And then he's like, you really are a valuable asset. Let me give you more land and another thing and this and that. Which just makes his fellow samurais even more pissed, right? Talk about greed, anger, and stupidity. It's rife in this era, isn't it? 3,000 court ladies harbored jealousy against Wang Chou Chun, the favorite of the emperor of the Han dynasty. Chakra's consorts, who numbered 99 million Nayuta, all envied Kaushika. That's another story. Minister Fujiwara no Sainayori bore a grudge against Imperial Prince Kaneakira, and Fujiwara no Tokuhira, jealous of Sagiwara no Michizane, spoke falsely of him to the emperor, causing him to be exiled. Consider your own situation in light of these examples. Your lord, the lay monk Emma's domain, used to be vast, but has now diminished. He has many sons who could succeed him, and there are also many retainers who have long served him. His retainers must be possessed by growing envy, just as fish become agitated when the water of their pond decreases, or as birds vie with one another to secure branches when autumn winds begin to blow. Moreover, since you have disobeyed your lord and gone against his wishes from time to time, the calumnies made to him against you must have been all the more numerous. However, even though you've been forced to relinquish your fief time and again, right? He lost his lands because Lord Emma was pissed at him. In your letter, you said that he has now conferred an estate upon you. Oh, this is indeed wondrous. This is precisely what is meant by the statement that unseen virtue brings about visible reward. Remember, that was an earlier Gosha we read. It must have happened because of your profound sincerity in trying to lead your lord to resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra. So Kingo's trying his best to follow the Lotus Sutra and being a bodhisattva, certainly of a superior. But this is also a cautionary tale to you guys, is when you're going to work and you have, some of you will develop a very friendly relationship with your manager or your boss or the owner of the company. And you'll take steps to introduce them to Lotus Sutra, and the backlash can be really surprising. and take you aback. So you have to be very cautious when punching up, as it were, okay? Not that you shouldn't do it, but you should be prepared for backlash. And if you teach or try to include your fellow workers, you're going to be like the samurai. They're going to smile in your face and go, wow, that's really cool. That's interesting. And then you'll invite them to your home. And most of them, I would gather, would say, oh, that's cool. That's cool. I'll check it out. I've heard of it before, blah, blah, blah. And some may come. But you should not be ignorant of the fact that many of those who've heard you talking will go to your boss and say, he's pushing his religion and stuff, and he shouldn't be, you need to tell him, or maybe you should fire him, because he should be working instead of eulogizing about his wonderful Buddhism. People are divisive. No less divisive today than they were during the age of the samurai. So, consequences. As Buddhists, we need to stay aware, vigilantly aware, of the power of this practice, because jealousy abounds. If you claim for any reason that you're doing something that has the air of superiority to it, others will try to break it down. That's the insatiable greed of samsara. People don't like to be told what to do, or that you're doing something superior to what they do. You have to be cautious. This is why there are a lot of cautions about bodhisattva activity like Shakyamuni in your, you know, your place of work is a place of survival for you and your family. So you should diminish as much as possible your risk. Instead, Shoju, be an example. Use your Buddhist training and mindset, mindfulness, to observe situations and the dynamic of your workplace, and be the calming element. Be the bridge. Some people won't that like that either, but they'll have less to throw at you behind your back. So, interesting lesson there. Nichiren, though, is being a bit of a cheerleader for Shijo Kingo, because he knows Shijo doesn't get a lot of support of this kind. He gets a lot of machinations and backstabbing, and even his boss is unreliable. Though his boss values him greatly, he easily forgets that when he has all these other clamoring voices talking crap about him. So another story Nichiren refers to, King Ajatasattru. Remember the guy who broke out in boils all over? He, though once the Buddha's enemy, came to take resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra at an urging of his minister Jivaka, so that he was able to prolong his life and continue his rule. King Wonderful Adornment corrected his mistaken views at the exhortation of his two sons. The same is true in your case. Lord Emma has now softened, probably as a result of your admonishment. This is solely because of your deep, resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra. So Shijo Kingo, we already know he's a little hot-tempered, and he's not one to shy away from telling his boss, you know, you really should look at the Lotus Sutra. He's trying hard to Shakyamuni, his boss. But the consequences, he loses land, and then his boss, you know, finds Shijo Kingo to be very reliable and gives him land, almost as an apology, and he goes back and forth. Well, to be expected. The deeper the roots, the more luxuriant the branches. The farther the source, the longer the stream. All sutras other than the Lotus Sutra have shallow roots and short streams, while the Lotus Sutra has deep roots and a distant source. That is why the great teacher Tendai stated that the Lotus Sutra would survive and spread even in the evil latter age. So again, this is this idea that this is a lifelong practice, that we will have moments of wonderful enlightenment and awakening, But that's not the end, because we need to carry that on through our life and help others to experience it. It's a bodhisattva life where we attain the Buddha way. The Buddha way is a disembodied, without time, life condition, experience, awakening. But like sleep, we awaken every morning to a new day of experience, challenges, reminders of how to perceive everything in light of the awakening. And then we rest. And then there's another awakening the following day. This is an analogy. This isn't actual Buddha's teaching. I'm using an analogy to demonstrate to you that this is a long haul. And we want it to be a long haul, because that's how we keep this Buddhism, this Myoho Rengekyo, alive and experienced. Without us to experience Myoho Rengekyo, what is there? No thing, noumena. So once again, we're faced with Buddhism is a recognition of the amazement of this life in samsara, because we can have this Buddha perception of this experience. Nowhere else can this happen. Can't happen after you're dead, because the mind is held within the body. The body is the vehicle for the mind. Without the body, the mind does not exist. Consciousness does not exist for you. See, it gets tricky there. Because you-ness, in other words, the samsaric human instantiation, goes on without you. But your perceptive mind is gone. So there we start playing with eternity, not eternity, right? Remember that old, we had a big discussion about that. We'll go on. Let's see, where are we? Okay, a little further. Many people have taken resolute mind in this teaching. But because great persecutions, both official and otherwise, have repeatedly befallen me, though they followed me for a year or two, all of them later either abandoned their resolve or turned against the Lotus Sutra. They lost their confidence. They began to doubt. Well, if Nichiren's so right, why is the government trying to kill him? Or sending him away to a far distant island like Sado? I don't think, my friends think I'm crazy for following him. I'm just going to go back to my friends in the Zen school and, screw the Lotus Sutra. I'm going to forget about Nichiren, right? So those people, that's even worse, because they've tasted the, in a matter of saying, they've tasted the wonder of the Myoho Rengekyo, and yet their confidence was weak. And so they walked away from it. Or if they have not given away their practice, in their practice, they have done so in their heart. So some of them are just, they keep chanting and reciting the Lotus Sutra, but it's just a rote habit. They're not even invested in it. You see what I mean? Or they've not given way in their heart, but they've done so in their practice. So yeah, I still think Myoho Rengekyo is probably the most important method for awakening. But that chanting, it's just too, I don't want to, I'm lazy. I don't want to do that, I'll read the Lotus, I'll study it, but I think it's right, but I'm not going to meet with anybody or discuss sutras or chant or recite. It's just too much. I don't want anyone to see me doing that, because I might get in trouble. Does that sound like anyone you know? Shakyamuni Buddha, the heir to King Suddhodana, it was Siddhartha that was the heir to Suddhodana, but Shakyamuni Buddha is the same person, it's just after his enlightenment, right? Was a great king who reigned over Jambudvipa, 84,210 countries. All kings of this land bowed to him, and he had 100,000,000,000 servants. Nevertheless, he left the palace of King Suddhodana at the age of 19 and entered Mount Dandaka, where he was to carry out ascetic practices for 12 years. At that time, he was attended by five men, Ajnata, Kaundinya, Ashvaji, Bandrika, Jashabala, Kashyapa, and Prince Kulita. Of these five, however, two left Shakyamuni during the sixth year, while the remaining three deserted him in the next 6 years. Alone, Shakyamuni continued his practice and became the Buddha. The Lotus Sutra is even more difficult to believe than in that Shakyamuni, and therefore the sutra itself, states that it is, quote, the most difficult to believe and the most difficult to understand, end quote. Moreover, in the latter day of the law, persecutions are far more frequent and intense than in the lifetime of Shakyamuni Buddha. The sutra states that a votary who perseveres despite these adversities will gain benefits greater than those obtained by offering alms to the Buddha for the space of an entire kalpa. So that says a lot about the origin story of Shakyamuni Buddha too, doesn't it? And you've heard me say many times that when Shakyamuni Buddha or Siddhartha Gautama became Shakyamuni Buddha, in other words, Shakyamuni being the great saint of the Shakya clan, King Suddhodana's son, not only awakened to what this alternate mind was that we call Buddha, but he embodied Buddha. He didn't attain enlightenment and then go back to sleep, wake up the next day, and work on attaining enlightenment. He was fully enlightened in every moment of his existence from that day forward. And so he was excited and taught the Kigon Sutra, the Abhatamsaka, the flower garland, all the names attributed to it. His first sermons were to those people around his orbit who were waiting to see if what he was going to attain. And they were all flabbergasted. They had no idea what he was talking about. And then I believe it occurred to him that he'd spent 12 years, according to Nichiren, depends on what documents you read, but several years through ascetic, following every Brahmanic tradition he could find, different Brahmin teachers, different esoteric teachers. Remember, the Vedic scriptures go back to the end of the last ice age, some 12,000 years. It's the oldest spiritual system ever that led to this Brahmanic class that in his day, Shakyamuni's day, Siddhartha's day, was polluted with thousands of different regional folklores. And I mean, there were hundreds of languages in India at the time. There's just so many different ways to describe how cosmic forces worked in our lives. Even in faraway Egypt, they had their own system and talk about cosmic forces within the life. But by the time Siddhartha was alive in Shakyamuni's day, those stories became rife with gods and deities and all sorts of other just ritualistic systems of, it became meaningless, really. We don't talk about this often, but one of Siddhartha's main impetus for searching out what real enlightenment was for human beings, in other words, to liberate humans' life experience from so much suffering, there must be a way. It was he who discovered enlightenment being a release from that bondage of avarice, greed, stupidity, right? That's what he discovered. That's Buddha. That's Buddha nature. That's Buddha mind. It's being liberated from those attachments. That's literally what it is. And in Buddhism, in his enlightenment, what he came to was that this was the method for not only liberating us from those attachments, those or the suffering, but recognizing that that suffering all came from these samsaric human activities of obsessing about ownership, about attachment, about having to have. In other words, that's what's anchoring you to this life. Not that we should leave this life, but that we need to see and experience this life for something that's much, much more wondrous about it. And that is that it is exists, that life is this experience, this process. But how do you teach that to people who have no idea what you're talking about? So he looked back, I'm sure, on his own experience. How did he come to it? And there were certain epiphanies that he had along the way. They weren't complete. They didn't get him all the way, but they gave him clues. And so this is how he began to teach for 50 years, to raise people's understanding without having to go through starving almost to death, as he did several times. What disciplines would you have to follow to gain this understanding of the mind-body experience and the experience of life? And that's what all the sutras are about. All the sermons were about raising people's understanding, until finally, the last 8 years of his life, he taught the Lotus Sutra, because that was the culmination. All right, now, ready or not, with everything you've learned, you should be ready. You should have the capacity to understand how this works. Myoho Renge Kyo. Myoho Renge Kyo is the encapsulation of everything I've been teaching and everything I've been preparing you to understand. That's Myoho Renge Kyo. And not everyone was ready to understand that still today. And today it's even worse, because now we think so much of ourselves, so much of our consumerist society, so much of our egos, that to think that something surpasses that, a lot of people feel insulted. They don't even bother to be jealous. That would take a recognition that what we're doing is superior. They're not even jealous. They're so full of themselves that they discount us, just like they did in Nichiren's day. And that's why this teaching could be lost. That's why it needs champions. It needs practitioners. It needs people like you and I, deeply understanding and enacting Myoho Renge Kyo. So I'm going to stop there. It is now some 2,230 years since the Buddha's passing. So that'll be where we start part two. And with that, I want to thank you deeply once again for participating in this, being part of this Sangha. This practice is so amazing, and the fact that you're dedicated to doing it is so wondrous. To be a part of it in any way, I feel so privileged. Thank you. And I can hardly wait, probably do part two right after I stop this video. So I will see you soon. Take care of your health, keep your practice strong, and we'll build this Sangha for life by now.